The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org. 2021 is on track to be the worst year for overdose deaths from illicit drugs in BC's history. Far more people have died from the overdose crisis during the pandemic than have died from COVID-19. Journalist Travis Lupik has been writing about the downtown east side for years, and his 2018 book, Fighting for Space, How a Group of Drug Users Transformed One City's Struggle with Addiction, brought to readers the grassroots fight to open North America's first safe injection site. On Saturday, November 6, at 1 in the afternoon, Travis Lupik will be presenting stories from that book, as well as presenting his newest book, Light Up the Night, America's Drug Overdose Crisis and the Drug Users Fighting for Survival, which will come out early next year. And earlier this week, I spoke with Travis Lupik. Hello, Travis Lupik, and welcome back to Co-op Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Now, on Friday, or Saturday rather, on the 6th of November, you're going to be making a presentation as part of the Heart of the City Festival. Tell us a little bit about what that's going to be.
Yeah, Heart of the City is a festival that I've followed for, gosh, as long as I can remember, and I was thrilled to be invited to take part this year. I'm going to be delivering a presentation, a sort of fast-moving PowerPoint presentation that narrates the story of harm reduction in Vancouver. This will loosely be based on my 2018 book, Fighting for Space, How a Group of Drug Users Transformed One City's Struggle with Addiction. And like I said, that's sort of Vancouver's history with harm reduction. So we'll spend about 20 minutes recounting the Insight story, the story of North America's first sanctioned supervised injection facility, and how organizations like the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users and the Portland Hotel Society, how these organizations got off the ground and worked together towards that goal through the 1990s and 2000s. And then we'll spend the next 20 minutes kind of bringing that story up to date, kind of taking the story that I tell in Fighting for Space up to the present, mostly looking at the overdose crisis, which this year was worse than ever and about 7 years into the crisis. And then we're going to open things up a little bit. We're going to hold a panel discussion with Aris Nix, who's a prominent drug user organizer in Vancouver, and with Anne Livingston, who's a co-founder of the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users, who helped get that organization off the ground in 1997. So a long story we're going to tell there, you know, 20, 25 years that we're going to pack into 40 minutes an hour, and then hopefully have a good debate with those really excellent panelists.
And is that going to be a live presentation, or will it be online, or a mix of both?
That's going to be live online. We're going to be on Zoom, you know, I don't have that link yet, but yeah, we'll be on Zoom, and it'll be promoted on the Heart of the City website and social media properties and all that. It'll Heart of the City is going to make it clear where to go.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I'm on the Heart of the City Festival website right now, and it's pretty clear. You just click the register button, it takes you to Eventbrite, and it is free, I understand, but you do have to register.
Yes.
Maybe, if you don't mind, can you just sort of remind us all a little bit about that fight to get Insight open, and as I recall, the Harper government being very hostile to it and fought very hard to ensure it didn't get open and tried to close it. And can you give us the thumbnail sketch of how that all worked?
Yeah, this is a story, like I said, that takes place through the 1990s and early 2000s, but tragically, it's more relevant today than it's ever been. This is the story of Vancouver's first overdose crisis, when you know the number of deaths attributed to illegal drugs, heroin primarily, but also cocaine, when those numbers of drugs really skyrocketed through beginning, probably it was like 1991 was kind of the rough start date for this crisis, and then it peaked in 1998. And this number of deaths, you know, was so horrible, so unfathomable, that eventually it really, you know, transformed entirely how Vancouver and then slowly the rest of Canada responds to people who struggle with addiction. The Portland Hotel Society, which at the time was one of Vancouver's largest nonprofit housing providers, and a nurse who was running the organization named Liz Evans, she really started doing things in a new kind of way, taking people off the street and giving them housing with no conditions. You know, you can live here without getting kicked out. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you do drugs, if you have some mental health issues, we're going to give you a home. And this was really a revolutionary idea at the time. Fast forward 20 years, we call this Housing First, and it's a policy used all over North America. But at the time, it didn't have a name. It was just Liz Evans and the Portland Hotel Society being kind to people. And she and her tenants got together with, as I mentioned, one of our panelists, Ann Livingston. They got together with Ann Livingston, Bud Osborne, other activists who had started a group called the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users, VANDU, a group that's still running today. And so these two organizations got together and they said, we're going to do something about this overdose crisis. And what they pushed for was a supervised injection facility. In 2003, they were successful. North America opened its first supervised injection facility in Vancouver, but that's not where the fight ended. You mentioned former Prime Minister Stephen Harper. His administration across the country in Ottawa did not take kindly to what was happening in Vancouver, and the city's new supervised injection facility eventually ended up in court. That took place from 2007 all the way to 2011, when the Supreme Court of Canada finally said, without a doubt, this is legal. The federal government cannot shut it down. So that was a long fight. You know, today Vancouver pats itself on the back for Vancouver, for North America's first injection facility. But I'm going to really emphasize during my presentation this weekend, you know, we had to fight for that tooth and nail. And it was not governments who were at the front. It was activists. It was homeless activists. It was people entrenched with serious addiction issues. It was people who society didn't always listen to, but in fighting for insight, they demanded that people take note and that they listen to them. I mentioned a minute ago, you know, that the crisis peaked in 1998, that this was a number of deaths that was so unfathomable that the city had to respond. We had to completely transform, you know, how we respond to addiction. We needed to really embrace, we actually imported it from Europe, but we had to embrace this new form of healthcare and addiction care called harm reduction. That number where the overdose crisis peaked in 1998 was 400 deaths. 400 was the number that was just inexcusable. We had to do something. Last year during COVID, there was 1,734 deaths due to illicit drug overdoses. So when we compare that crisis of the 90s to that crisis that we're dealing with today, I mean, it doesn't even compare.
Yeah.
400 to 1,700.
And I think last I heard from the BC Coroner's Office that this year is looking like it may even be worse than last year. That's just unconscionable.
Yeah, we're on track for just over 2,000, for about 2,050. So, you know, five times the crisis of the 90s that was so severe, we had to transform how we respond to addiction. You know, you can find all these numbers on a chart that the BC Coroner's Office keeps. And, you know, if you only look at the chart from the 1990s and 2000s, you see this massive spike in 1998, right? The peak of that year of the crisis. But when you elongate the chart to take into account, you know, this current crisis up to 21, that crisis of the 1990s, it's a flat line. I mean, you know, when you adjust the graph to take into account these new deaths, the previous crisis becomes a flat line. The spike disappears. That's how severe the crisis is that we're dealing with today.
So can you bring it up to date now? I mean, we know that the overdose crisis is much worse now. My understanding is, you know, far more people have died from overdose deaths in the past 2 years than have died from COVID. Maybe also tell us a bit about how the COVID pandemic has exacerbated the problem.
Yeah. There's no exact date for the start of this second crisis. You could put it at 2013, 2014. By that time, overdose deaths were already up about 30% over previous years. So maybe, you know, it was becoming evident something was happening. That crisis of the 90s was a strong batch of China white heroin, of powdered heroin that people weren't used to. This crisis is a synthetic opiate called fentanyl, exponentially more powerful than fentanyl. So powerful that, you know, dealers have a hard time cutting this, have a hard time breaking it up, and that's why you get these overdose deaths. Police officers always use the cookie analogy. You know, they said that you can't always be in control of how many chocolate chips you're going to get in any given cookie, and fentanyl's chocolate chips can kill you. That's the overdose crisis we're dealing with today. Fentanyl, like I said, arrived in 2013. picked up over the next 6-7 years, and then like we were just discussing, now we're up over 2,000 deaths this year. That's not the only parallel between this crisis and that crisis of the 90s. Just like in the 90s, government was incredibly slow to respond, and not only didn't respond, not only was slow to respond, it got in the way. Just like that crisis of the 90s, it was activists leading the way. It was Vancouver area network of drug users. It was individual activists like Anne Livingston, you know, who brought people together in 1997 to form VANDU. In 2014-15, she was walking alleys of the downtown east side with a Narcan kit, the overdose antidote, responding to overdoses, fighting for additional injection sites, which she was eventually successful with other people like Sarah Blythe and other activists with VANDU, Hugh Lampkin, Eris Nix, who I mentioned is also going to be on my panel. So there's a lot of parallels between these two crises, and those are kind of the two stories that we'll talk about this weekend, about how, you know, there was a crisis, there was a lack of a government response, government got in the way, and it was activists who really stepped in. You mentioned that things have gotten worse under COVID. That's absolutely true. There were just over 1,500 deaths in 2018. Then we finally looked like we made a little bit of progress in 2019. That dropped to just under 1,000, the first drop that we'd experienced in more than 5 years. But then 2020, after COVID hit, that number jumped from 1,000 to 1,700 again, a new all-time high. So after a little bit of progress was made under COVID, during COVID, we set a new all-time record, 1,700. And then, as we mentioned, this year we're on track for 2,000. So COVID has really made this problem worse. There's no science behind this yet, but we've got some pretty good guesses at what happened. You know, COVID brought social isolation, especially in the early months of the lockdowns. We were telling people, stay home. And the number one rule of using hard drugs is never use alone. But with COVID, you know, to stay safe from that virus, that's exactly what we were telling people to do. Stay home, use alone. Not only that, but we think COVID brought on a lot of mental health issues for people. You know, we cut off connections. We kept people isolated. We took away their jobs. We caused a lot of stress. In addition, we with the lockdowns, disrupted a lot of illicit drug supply routes. So, you know, heroin we were getting from the United States or Mexico, or fentanyl we were getting from China. All those supply lines were disrupted. And so dealers were forced to stretch their supplies a little further, mix in things that they might not otherwise. And so not only were we exacerbating mental health crises, telling people to use alone, but we were also creating a more dangerous drug supply. We think all these factors kind of got together and then resulted in that. This just an unimaginable increase in overdose deaths through COVID, over and above the unimaginable increases that we'd already experienced over the last 5 years.
The response nowadays is, or the stories I hear, is that you know, what's needed is a safe supply, a legal supply. I know the city has filed an application with Health Canada for an exemption on the or decriminalization of simple possession. I think the province has followed suit now and are sending in an application to make it province-wide. Do these look like adequate responses to you, or is what else really needs to be done to try and ensure that, you know, people are safe? That seems the most important thing.
Well, these are tricky questions, and let's begin by acknowledging people's concerns. Decriminalizing drugs, removing penalties, going further and legalizing drugs, actually supplying illicit substances. These are scary ideas and not what we're used to. And I think that we need to acknowledge that. I was brought around to these ideas reluctantly and slowly, a number of years ago now, but reluctantly. I didn't like the idea of, you know, just giving people cocaine. I was especially concerned about the idea, the possibility that pharmaceutical corporations might be involved in giving people cocaine. You know, Pfizer and Purdue Pharma don't exactly have the greatest records of corporate responsibility. Do we really want them in the cocaine business in Canada? But with this overdose crisis, I've come to accept I've arrived at a loss. I just don't know what else we do. Canada, and especially BC, has responded with a lot of harm reduction. We've opened up dozens of supervised injection facilities, under Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, we've flooded the streets with the overdose reversal drug Narcan, naloxone. We've distributed fentanyl test strips in severely affected neighborhoods. And the deaths, like I said, came down in 2019, but then shot back up under COVID. This crisis is now 6 or 7 years in, and it's worse than ever. So even if these are scary ideas, decriminalization and legalization, I don't know what else we do. I think it's also worth acknowledging that these ideas could create new problems. We don't know what decriminalization or legalization would look like exactly, but they could create, you know, new problems. But they could likely solve this immediate problem of skyrocketing overdose deaths. So, as you mentioned, Vancouver and British Columbia have taken the first steps. They've applied to the federal government to decriminalize drugs, which means to remove criminal penalties. This idea would essentially extend the bubble that we've created around supervised injection facilities and wrap it over the entire city and then the entire province. So we're not actually changing laws. We're not saying drugs are no longer illegal. We're using the same tool that Insight uses to operate. We're going to ask for an exemption from those laws. So nothing's rewritten in Parliament or anything like that. We're just saying, can you grant us an exemption so that these laws don't apply here? And so that bubble would extend from Insight over Vancouver and then British Columbia. The idea here behind decriminalization, removing criminal penalties, is that we would bring people out of the shadows. We would remove stigma. We would encourage people to no longer hide from police. So things would happen like, instead of a man taking his illegal drugs and rushing his shot in an alley, looking over his shoulder for police, you know, maybe not measuring things out, he'll be able to slow down without fear of persecution, police, and take more care with what he's doing. And without the fear of stigma created by criminalization, maybe also ask for help. Say, it's time. This isn't going to get me in trouble with police anymore. It's time I talk about this with my family. So I think that would save lives. You know, we'd bring people out of the shadows, remove stigma, get people talking about addiction more. It wouldn't solve the fentanyl crisis. Decriminalization only deals with the possession side, the demand side of drugs. It leaves illegal drugs in the hands of that doesn't address the supply side, though. It leaves illegal drugs in the hands of organized crime, of dealers, and those dealers have largely switched from heroin to this dangerous synthetic drug fentanyl. To solve that supply side, we would need to go this next step further that I've mentioned a couple times, legalization, you know, actually supplying people with pure, clean, illicit drugs as opposed to the garbage that's all made up of fentanyl that's on the streets right now. And we're talking about that a little bit in Vancouver. There are some trials that have been going for a few years now with great results, I might add. But we haven't moved a whole lot on legalization. And if we are going to solve the fentanyl problem, I think that's what we have to do.
In the time we have left, I know that you've got a new book coming out early next year. You've taken a look at the drug crisis down in the United States. Can you tell me a little bit about that new book? Is the United States been facing the more or less exactly the same problems here in Vancouver, or are there different nuances to that story?
Yeah, this is my second book, which will be out in January, just after Christmas, Light Up the Night, America's Overdose Crisis and the Drug Users Fighting for Survival. In many ways, this really just continues the story of fighting for space. Vancouver embraced and sort of pioneered drug user activism long before most other areas of North America. And so as the story in Fighting for Space sort of ends in the 2010s, in Light Up the Night, we sort of continue where it left off, with drug user activism spreading across the United States, spreading out of not directly spreading out of Vancouver, but like I said, Vancouver was involved in this stuff a lot earlier, and so in Light Up the Night, we'll say what's happened since then, focusing on America. The crisis is very similar there. Of course, there are regional nuances. You know, the United States is just so big, but they're dealing with fentanyl the same way that we are. And in certain areas, places like Ohio, Pennsylvania, the numbers are just as bad as they are in Vancouver, worse in these pockets than anywhere else in the continent. And so we're going to say, again, how government is stalling, not doing a whole lot, and how it's activists and drug user activists who are leading the United States response to this overdose crisis. Specifically, I follow the adventures of two specific activists, Louise Vincent of North Carolina, and her sort of partner in crime, Jessica Tilley of Northampton, Massachusetts, and how these two really, really incredible women have overcame just incredible adversity especially through their early lives, mental illness, sexual abuse, all sorts of trauma, to form these really incredible drug user activist organizations, and are now working at the federal level, organizing people across the country to reduce overdose deaths.
Can you just remind us before we go when the event's going to be on and how people can register to see your presentation on Saturday?
Yeah, when is the event? it's on Saturday at 1 p.m. Saturday, November 6th at 1 p.m. And to find out where that is, just Google Heart of the City, and that'll lead you right to the Heart of the City website and their social media properties. And there you'll find a link to that 1 p.m. presentation.
It's called Fighting for Space, Drug Users' Response to the Overdose Crisis. And registration's free and it's easy to find. I don't suppose you know if it's going to be one of the events that'll be archived on the Heart of the City Festival website in case people miss it on Saturday, that they can still go in and look at your presentation and the discussion?
I believe it is. I'm not positive about that, but it's a digital event that we're doing entirely over Zoom. And so I don't know why they wouldn't record it. But if you want to make sure, register in advance and we'll see you at 1 p.m. on Saturday.
Well, it's been really great to get a chance to talk with you, Travis. Always a delight to talk with you. And thanks very much for spending time here on Co-op Radio.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
That was the journalist, Travis Lupik. His presentation, Fighting for Space, Drug Users' Response to the Overdose Crisis, will be on tomorrow, Saturday, November 6th, at 1 p.m. The event includes an online question and answer session after the presentation. Admission is free, but registration is required. Head over to heartofthecityfestival.com for details. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.